Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 802. It's the 15th of June, 2017. On the podcast today, I have George Roach, Chairman and CEO of Premier African Minerals, that's PREM. And George answers private investors' questions. Plus, Matt Lofgren, CEO of Nostra Terra, NTOG, talks about their purchase of a further 25% of East Ghazalat's concession in Egypt. Also on the podcast, Paul Welsh, President and CEO of SDX Energy, ticker there is SDX, and Paul discusses current operations in Morocco and Egypt, and what's to come also. Plus, David Lindsley, CEO of Pembridge Resources, PERE ticker, and David discusses their suspension from AIM today and their intention to float on the main list. Plus, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Roach, Chairman and CEO of Premier African Minerals. That's PREM ticker. George, thanks for joining me.
Yes, good morning and great to be chatting to you as well. Thank you.
Yes, and it's nice because normally you're on a mobile in Zimbabwe somewhere, or it's, you know, down a mine or up a hill somewhere. So it's nice to have you in crystal clear quality, and we'll be asking you some private investor questions in a bit. But before we do that, George, as always, for people not aware of Premier African Minerals, can you summarise the business, please?
Yes, Premier is an exploration, development, and now in production junior mining company. We have interesting projects in Zimbabwe and in Mozambique and other interests in Africa as well. We're one of the few companies, I think, that has gone from exploration to actually getting into production.
Excellent. Okay, let's get into the questions then. First and foremost, how consistently are we hitting break-even for production at RHA, and how much concentrate have we produced to date?
Well, we have shipped, the first shipment has gone. The first shipment was 20 tons of concentrate. That has been delivered to warehouse in Durban, and we've been paid for that. It's worth noting that you can't export from Zimbabwe without having credit guarantee in place. So the issue of payment has never been a discussion. We're quite comfortable with our takeoff arrangements and see no reason for any concern or any need to vary anything in relation to that. In terms of the optimization at RHA, it is ongoing, and I've previously discussed that in quite a bit of detail in press releases. The plant has demonstrated its ability to produce at break-even. And during this optimization, what we look to do is to extend those periods of operation during which we can have constant and continuous operation to get to a point where by the time we get to the end of the third quarter, we should be looking at the level of profitability that has been anticipated. The optimization by its nature means that there are times when plant is stopped for adjustments. There is various ongoing development work that takes place during this phase. And the most important aspects are that the plant has demonstrated its ability to operate at profitable levels, and shipments have commenced. First shipment has been made, and we're busy building up stock again towards the next and then subsequent shipments.
Okay, excellent stuff. Next question is, what is the intention for Zulu, sale or JV, and how are Zulu talks coming on?
Intention is whatever is best for Premier shareholders. The developments at JV at Zulu at the moment are actually quite exciting, and I did indicate in a recent press release that metallurgical results were anticipated at any moment. And the early results that we have seen, and I do anticipate being able to press release some of this detail very shortly, are good and they're positive, and I'm quite excited about it. In terms of the future of RHA, I've said on a number of occasions that we have various people talking to us. Some of those discussions are quite intense at the moment. No deal has been struck yet. When one is, I would announce it immediately. Whether it will be a form of JV or whether it would be a complete spin-off of the Zulu asset into a freestanding company remains to be seen. There is, I think, quite a bit of attraction to taking this Zulu asset into its own entity. But as I say, no decision has been made at this time, but discussions are ongoing.
Okay, great stuff. And regarding Zulu, this next question is, how many holes have we drilled in the second part of the drilling program, and when are the next Zulu drill results due?
Five have been completed. Core has been split. Samples are in the process of being prepared. These will be delivered to SGS within in the coming two-week period. And then it's a case of how soon we get turnaround. SGS's turnaround has been fairly quick, so we would expect to start seeing results coming in within the next 4 weeks, month, there or thereabouts.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and the next question is, are you still supplying Noble?
We have not changed our takeoff agreement at all. Our takeoff agreement remains with the same people and the same party previously announced. Our pricing is very good. I see no reason for us to, nor could we, want to vary our takeoff agreement at this point in time. So the answer to that is yes.
Yeah. Okay, excellent stuff. And the last one, George, is TCT is described as in the black. Can you update with some numbers, please?
I can do it in the form of a press release. I'm not going to try and do it over this call at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make the point that the Mozambican forestry situation goes through a period between January and March annually when no cutting occurs and when there is very little export as well. So stock is generally built up during this period. And at the moment, TCT operates profitably, but has a very high stock level. Now that converts to cash from this point going forward for the rest of the year. Details of the operation, that'll obviously have to come out in a separate media, but that's primarily in summary where TCT is at the moment.
Excellent, George, that's the question. Thanks for that. Just one final thing to do, if someone's listening right now and they're not following you on Vox Markets but like the sound of what you're doing right there, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, George?
Well, the first reason is one that we haven't spoken about, and that's our holding an interest in Circum Minerals. Mm-hmm. Circum has a substantial potash deposit in the Danakil. We are a small holder at this time in Circum, but I think that there are some quite exciting opportunities that may well come out of that in the near future. So that's the first reason. The second is that the Zulu Lithium deposit, we have metallurgical test results anticipated very soon. We're excited about it. And the third reason is that at RHA, we have a tungsten operation that is going back into production at this point in time.
Excellent, George. Thanks for that. And you've got a lot going on there. So hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Pleasure indeed, and thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matt Lofgren, CEO of Nostra Terra. And that's NTOG. Matt, thanks for coming back on.
All right, Justin, thank you.
Now, you've got some news out today about the agreement to acquire a further 25% of East Gazlet, and we'll go into that in a bit. But before we do that, for people not aware of what you're all about, Matt, could you go through, essentially, or summarise what Nostraterra is all about, please?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, in one sense, Nostraterra is an exploration production company. We're focused on existing established hydrocarbon provinces. So we're currently in the U.S. and Egypt. Both these areas, they've been producing for over a century. Both are established industries. They've got good service companies, educated and trained employees. But you know, another thing about these is that both these areas, you can do drilling and workovers and so on. They can all be done at low prices and relatively quick because they're established provinces. Yet there's still opportunity for further upside, as we've seen in the last decade with the U.S. and all the big changes that have happened there. And in Egypt, you're just seeing some of those changes in more recent years. So it's good to have those established areas, but there's excitement going forward as well.
Yeah, okay. Explain this deal you've done today then, Matt, with you've acquired a further 25% in East Gazlet. And, of course, you were involved there before with Independent Resources. So, explain this and the reasons behind this, please.
Yeah. I mean, we're real excited about the news today. I think it's a pretty good one for us. If you recall, it's been about a year and a half ago that that the market was excited as well. It's a great little asset. So we were introduced to it by IRG. They presented the opportunity to us with a purchase price of $3.5 million cash at close, and we said, "Yeah, we'd like to be involved." But first thing that we did was we felt that the terms could be better, so we immediately got involved with the seller. We negotiated and got them to agree to $1 million cash at close instead of $3.5 million, and then they took back a note for another $2.5 million for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that was our first involvement, our little contribution, if you will, and then the JV was off to the races.
Excellent stuff. And so now you said it's a great little asset, and that's why you decided to acquire a further 25%. And So, tell us about the asset, if you could, Matt, and the deal you've done here.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to understand the history, because it isn't all roses, and this is actually what's created the opportunity, frankly. So, we liked the asset back then, it deteriorated, unfortunately. Shortly after the acquisition, there were some problems. We had done our due diligence, but we couldn't anticipate the way certain things would happen with relationships and such. Unfortunately, it deteriorated pretty quickly. I give you a quick point and kind of get back to where we are, but There was a point where one of the partners had actually gone in, was in a meeting in Cairo with the operator, didn't like the way the meeting was going, stormed out of the meeting. And no coincidence that shortly after that, we stopped getting our daily reports and all of our reports in general, for that matter. Yeah. So for us, relationships are very important. And you've got to have good relationships with all the stakeholders involved. And but we haven't been the lead in this JV. So it's been tough for us to have much influence beyond that. So we had it initially with the acquisition, went on where we didn't have that influence. And, we watched where the market was going. We watched where the asset was going. And we finally thought, it's about time to see some changes in here. And, in the last few months, the end of last year, actually, we got involved and said, let's step up and see if we can solve some problems here and create some opportunity.
Yeah, okay. And as far as the asset is concerned, you're saying it adds, I just saw that now, is it 1 million in 2P reserves? Was that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the way it happened, though, is you got to understand, so we did have a $500,000, now we've got the other half, so that takes us up to a million, but it's also at $1.09 per barrel.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, so going back to the acquisition, if you look at that $3.5 million total, the million paid down in cash initially, and then we turn around and we had that $2.5 million note carry back for 2 years, had problems with that. The market knows we already had to announce about the default from the operator, and then with the note, and that's why the market doesn't appreciate what's happened here, because it's been a problem. But so that's, again, that's where we saw the opportunity. That's where we got involved. And so we went to the seller at that point. They were concerned about the note. They wanted to get rid of this and have things cleaned up as well. So we went and saw that as an opportunity to start getting involved more actively. We talked to the operator, and Nostratera got involved, and we helped negotiate that down and get that note from $2.5 million to $200,000. We closed that. We paid that right away and got that, cleared up that problem. So we did that. We knocked that one out, and then the next part from there was, let's start paying attention to the operator and to the relationships in Cairo, and see if there's something that makes sense here to carry this much further and create a bigger opportunity for us.
Yeah. And so how is that, how is that relationship now, and what's happening, what is production there, and what's going on there?
Yeah, production, for the last 18 months, because of the way things were, production has dropped. We don't have written reports, as I said. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that stopped, and we don't have those written reports, so we haven't been able to report that to the market. Also doesn't help that we weren't the lead in the JV, so we didn't have that information presented to us. So anyway, we're in very good constructive conversation with the operator, as well as with the government. They've been very welcome and very open and in discussing how to move things forward, and they want to see this happen. They want to see us there. So we've been invited in, and we're working on these changes with them. So that's where at that point we decided, okay, if it makes sense, let's see if we can acquire a larger interest in this, and at that point we'll have more influence and we'll be able to change things.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, but that is an amazing stat there, isn't it? Where he says, assuming all production targets are met, Nostratera will have acquired just over 1 million barrels of 2P reserves for the equivalent of $1.09 per barrel of oil. That's good.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind, I mean, this, you get a lot of companies who like to talk about their reserves, big reserves, all the potential. Mm. This is a producing field. This is already existing producing.
Yeah.
So, and the lack of CapEx and lack of attention for the wells in the recent year and a half creates that opportunity where we're buying it on the cheap. We're not paying any cash until different hurdles are met, and then you got some low hanging fruit to be able to turn things around. So, we're pretty excited about the position here.
Yeah. Okay. And quickly before you go, let's get an overview of other parts of the business. So, Pine Mills and the acquisition at Magnolia Petroleum. What's going on there, Matt?
Yeah, well, I mean, Pine Mills was something. I mean, we started off production last year. It was less than 100 barrels a day. We've acquired Pine Mills towards the end of last year, and we've updated on that recently. I mean, our value from Pine Mills alone is $4.5 million for a PV-10, and that's just for the 1P, just for the proven.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got $4.5 million, and this is for Pine Mills, but also for our PUDs over in the Permian Basin. So we've got $4.5 million right there in Texas in the U.S. That's not showing in our market cap, obviously. Mm-hmm. We've got East Gazalat that had been on hold. No value had been given to that. I completely understand. I would look at it the same way, considering the lack of progress and the problems that were there. But we're obviously cleaning that up, and we're doing it out of song. So there's value that's being created there as well. And then we've got the investment we made in Magnolia recently. That's an area where we were actually contacted by former directors and brokers in London representing large shareholdings there. And they said, look, we understand what you guys are capable of doing, and we'd like to see you get involved and see if you can help that company as well. So, you know, our target obviously is only if it's something that's going to make sense and make money for our shareholders. Otherwise, we wouldn't be putting a dime into it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to point out, like you say, there's an NPV of over four there at Pine Mills, and yet your market cap is just over two. So you can see the disjoint there. Marvellous. Matt, well, if anyone's listening right now and they like what's going on here and the developments you're making, but they're not following you on Vox Market as yet, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the first one, I mean, we've got a very small market cap, but we're already a producer. It's not too easy to find companies. And keep in mind, you know, our market cap's still under 10 million pounds. And we've done something that's pretty meaningful today alone. Add Pine Mills to that, add some of our other activities. It's not too often you're going to find a small market cap that's already producing and growing under 10 million pounds like that. Mm-hmm. Second point. We understand the importance of scale in order to drive returns for shareholders, cover your overheads, leaves the rest for growth and to grow the business further. We get that, and we're working on that right now. And the third point is production. We're very focused on increasing production. We're very cash flow driven. When we started the year, we started 2017 under 100 barrels a day, and we're making some pretty significant moves. Just watch and see where we finish the year.
Marvellous, Matt. Good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got lots going on at the moment. So hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thanks very much.
You bet, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Welsh, President and CEO of SDX Energy. And ticker there is SDX. Paul, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's appreciated to be here.
I've got to say, since you've listed a while back there, but a year or so back, we've had numerous, actually, people requesting you to come on. And I know you're quite an exciting company, lots of things happening, because Malky's been on the podcast quite a few times mentioning you, so it's good to get you on. But for people not aware, Paul, of what you're all about at SDX, can you explain or summarize the business, please?
Sure. I'll give you a kind of a brief summary. So I think for us, we're an onshore producing E&P company. We're focused on North Africa. We currently are producing about 4,000 barrels a day in Egypt and Morocco with roughly 9 million barrels of reserves, 2P reserves. The thing about us that's interesting is that we have high margin production. So what that means is it allows us to be cash flow positive down to $21 a barrel Brent, which is a great thing in this market in my mind. The other thing is that we're well financed. So we have $40 million of working capital, of which $21 million is cash. And most importantly, no debt. We've also recently made a pretty exciting discovery up in the Nile Delta in Egypt, our South Dessouk well, where we flowed 26.8 million barrel cubic feet a day of gas, which is roughly 4,300 barrels a day. So that's fairly exciting. And you know, we've listed on an AIM a year ago, and people that got involved with us at that point in time have tripled their money. So it's been an exciting ride for us over these last 12 months, and we've been really thankful to be part of it.
Yeah, well, I remember you listening and someone saying to me, I'll keep an eye on this company here. And, you know, trouble is you get so many of these people saying to you, keep an eye on this company. But you, one of the companies have turned out to, you know, stick to that promise and done really well there. So let's go through, if you could, the individual parts of the business. So the company's production profile, if you could sort of break that down, Paul.
So we make about 4,000 barrels a day at the moment, yeah, which is roughly split 3,300 barrels a day in Egypt and essentially 700 barrels a day, barrels equivalent per day in Morocco. But I think that's kind of the base. You know, I think what's important here is that we have several projects underway both in Egypt and Morocco that allow us to increase this production in the near term. So in Egypt, at the time we listed, we talked about this a lot. You know, we have this upgrade going on in our Meseta field, where essentially we've been facilities constrained for quite some time, and we're upgrading the facilities to handle from 10,000 to 20,000 barrels a day of fluid. That project is now moving forward. The kit is in the field. It's being completed at the moment. So we expect in the near term here to have that kicked off and running, and that will allow us to complete a workover program, which will see the doubling of production in that field. So that is finally an exciting moment for us here. Also, as I said up front, you know, we've made this discovery in South Dessouk. The production rate that we tested this well was 26.8 million cubic feet a day, but that was surface constrained. So the well had a lot more to deliver. So here we're looking at some near-term early production systems to get that well up and flowing into sales, concurrent with a development plan. And the other part of the story here is that not only do we have success in the shallow, but we also had success in the deep. So we think the deep potential could allow us to produce potentially oil reserves from the same concession. So we're pretty excited about that. And then in Morocco, I think people have seen we've announced that we're going to have a pretty extensive drilling program starting in the third quarter this year, the end of the third quarter, that will allow see us drilling 7 wells, 5 development wells, and 2 exploration wells that will allow us to, I say, close the gap on our target, which is to produce 24 million cubic feet a day of gas in this concession. At the moment, we're producing 6, and we have line capacity of 24. So we're trying to close that gap with this program. In addition to that, we've picked up new acreage in what we call the RARB Center Permit. So that gives us control of the entire basin between ourselves and our partner, ONM. So there's been a lot of exciting things happening within our production profile over the last 12 months.
Yeah, you've certainly been kept busy there, Paul. So one of the things I looked at recently, I saw an interview with you, Ewan Malky, actually, and you talked about the financials. And so if you could take us through that, the recent announcements there on Morocco and South Tizouk, and also the fundamentals. Very interesting stats you reeled off on the cash flow there, free cash flow.
Right. So what I think when we were speaking with Malky, the interesting thing about we picked up the Circle opportunity, and when we combine with our existing free cash flow, that means in 2017 we're going to generate roughly $30 million of free cash flow between all of our assets, which is pretty remarkable in a low price environment. So those are the kind of things that we seen post this Circle acquisition. But in addition to that, because we made this high quality gas discovery in South Tizouk, you know, we can put that thing on production, we believe, relatively quickly, and that will add to that cash flow. And in Morocco, with this upcoming drilling program, again, because we already have the existing infrastructure sitting there, we can connect these wells in under 30 days and be flowing to sales, you know, that quickly. So, you know, we see as we move through 2017 between Meseta and Morocco and South Tizouk, you know, a substantial increase in our production, and concurrent with that, an increase in our free cash flow. So at the moment, our forecast is for $30 million. We'd like to see that increase. But again, time will tell. It's just me how quickly we can get things up and running.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to say, but so people can sort of do ballpark figure maths. I mean, what do you hope to be sort of producing, say, by the end of this year then, Paul?
Yeah, we're looking for something about somewhere close to 6,500 barrels a day, BOEs per day. But again, it'll depend on timing and government approvals and that sort of thing. But that's what we are looking at in broad terms.
Yeah, and like you said, the cost of production there is quite low, because at the moment we've seen the oil price pull back a little bit. But you're saying what, the cost of that is around about what, low 20s?
We can make money down to $21 a barrel Brent, which is fantastic. But I think the other thing that we also have to remember for us, because we produce a lot of gas in Morocco, Moroccan gas we sell at $10 an MCF, and that's completely independent of the oil price. So we have a good high margin business sitting in Morocco that's completely independent of what the oil or gas markets do, because we sell this volume under 5-year contracts, right? So, yeah. You know, we're fairly insulated from any, you know, short-term fluctuation in oil price as a result of that.
So you sell it for 10. How much is it producing it for?
We probably produce it for under a dollar.
That's a nice margin there, isn't it?
It is a very good margin, yes. And, you know, you combine that good margin with very good fiscal terms, as people are aware of in Morocco, allows us to have a substantially cash flow positive business in that country.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, Paul, well, it sounds exciting. You've got a lot going on. You're debt-free, you've got cash. Like you said, there's a chance of to up the production rates considerably. So if anyone's listening right now and they're not following you on Vox Markets, you know, give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, Paul.
Well, I think for us, we're well-funded, we've got no debt, and we are generating positive cash flow. And so in this environment, I think companies like that are kind of rare, unfortunately. We have tangible growth potential, right, that we can see, we can articulate, and also we can capture within our existing cash constraints. So again, we see the ability to grow within our own needs, our own means. And we're delivering on our objectives, right? We came to AIM a year ago. We had laid out short, medium, and long-term objectives And within 12 months, we've met our medium-term objective. So, you know, we believe we're one of the few companies out there that are really delivering on what we say we're going to do. And so we think that's an important aspect of our business.
Excellent. Paul, listen, it's good to chat to you, and you've got a lot going on. So hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Lindsley, Chief Executive Officer of Pembridge Resources. That's P-E-R-E, ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Now, it's a little bit odd, really, I suppose, because people can't at the moment buy any stock in your company because you've just announced a day suspension, and we'll go through that in a bit. We'll go through some other bits of news as well. But before we do so, David, for people not aware of you, just give an summary as to the business, please.
Yes, of course. Pembridge Resources is currently an AIM-listed cash shell, and we are in the process of moving our listing from AIM onto the standard list of the LSE.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And as far as the areas you're looking at and what you're doing, I mean, you've been amassing a team there with lots of experience. I mean, people just sort of go back and look at the RNSs, and there's guys there. I don't know how many years you've got between you at big companies, and but it's quite impressive there. So what are you looking at doing, hopefully, and where, you know, areas of interest, where are they, not only sort of commodity-wise, but maybe geographically-wise as well, Dave?
Sure. Yes, of course. Well, we're concentrating on the base and precious metals space, and we're looking at, in terms of jurisdiction, we're looking at North America, South America, Sub-Saharan Africa, and Europe. And you're right to point out the experience of the team, and but your point there about how the experience of the team is how the team has come from large companies is partially true. I think that the most important thing about the team, in fact, is that the guys have spent many years developing mining projects, and I think that sometimes investors need to understand that. It's all very well having a team that might have worked at a bank or have a team that might have worked at a major managing huge budgets and what have you. But in fact, in our space, what you need are people who've actually know how to effectively get their hands dirty, get a hold of an asset, extract value, and build. And if you look at Peter's track record, for example, I know he doesn't like to brag, but if you look at his track record, he's developed over 20 mines, some of which are part of major companies now. And, you know, that level of experience is pretty unique. And it's something that I hope will translate into, you know, adding significant shareholder value for us and the projects that we're currently reviewing.
Yeah. Okay, and let's go to the announcement today. So, suspension and corporate update. So, yes. Take us through this, the detail of this, if you could, because there may be some people now who are, you know, invested, and they may be a bit worried here. But can you explain the detail here, please, David?
Yes, of course. So, under the AIM rules, we're currently suspended, and we're going down the route of, as I said, of moving off AIM and onto the standard listing on the LSE. That's a process. We have made significant progress on that process, and I think that we should have things wrapped up fairly quickly. As it says in the RNS, we're hoping to have things wrapped up before the mid-July. So the suspension process is one which can last up to 6 months, and I know some people get nervous that they think it's going to take that long, but in our case, because what we're doing is relatively vanilla, that simply can't happen. I can't see that happening. I see this as a fairly quick process, although, of course, it's not in my hands. It's up to the UKLA, and I can't speak for them, but we've certainly made tremendous progress, and I'm confident that we'll get this all done and start trading again very soon.
Yeah, okay. And just going back further along chronologically of your RNS, is that you recently announced the lithium asset, the sale of that. Could you explain why you've done that?
Yes, of course. I mean, that was the final part of essentially reorganizing Pembridge. The lithium asset is a very early stage project in the US. It was a minority position, and it just doesn't fit into our strategy. The assets that we're looking at are nearer production, permitted, in some cases equipped. And we're looking to extract value and extract or create value in those projects relatively quickly. So to look at something which is many, many years out into what is, in my opinion, a bit of a frothy market. You know, I mean, the lithium market is one which, if all the projects come online, well, even if a fraction of them come online, they're going to be producing significantly more than the world demand. Yes. So that you can talk about Tesla's factory and how there's going to be a great demand for lithium, but certainly not to the extent that people are promoting it.
Yeah.
So it's a space, actually, which I looked at a few years ago. I looked at the lithium space 2-3 years ago, and I thought that it was a little bit overblown then, and it seems to me to be a little bit more overblown now. So it doesn't really fit in with what we're doing.
No, and I agree. What I find slightly annoying as well on the junior market, on AIM, a lot of companies are edging towards any kind of mention of lithium they can do. If they can get, they're exploring anyway, and they find any bit of suggested lithium, they'll really flag it up and really playing off that hotness and that, you know. And I just think, I mean, you know, I'm quite cynical, but I do think some companies are playing that just to get the SP to go up.
So am I. I mean, I'm very cynical about it. I mean, you have to look at, you know, can the asset potentially generate or create a marketable lithium product?
Yeah.
And people don't really look at that. They just hear the word lithium and think, oh, it's going to be lithium, it's fine. Well, that's not the case. It depends what type of deposit it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people need to do more than just scratching the surface. They need to look closely at these things. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the asset that we sold. I'm just saying it doesn't fit in what we're doing.
Yeah.
But also, as a general rule, I think that market is very much overblown, just as you correctly said.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember. I mean, I suppose not that old, but when I was still investing, when the dot-com bubble happened, and you had a lot of small companies there just changing the name to dot-com overnight, just to get that rise, you know? I don't know if they had any intention of actually trading as an online entity, but they certainly used that dot-com to their advantage.
Well, it happens, and of course, the mining industry is subject to cycles, and different commodities cycle at different rates and at different times, and you know, people like to try and catch those waves and ride them. And you know, if that's what you want to do, then go ahead. I'd much rather concentrate on assets that I can actually get my hands on and make cash out of and generate cash. So I think that's a market end I prefer.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people get all excited about this, you know, lithium and cobalt and all this. And I often think, well, listen, don't forget, a lot of this, you know, a lot of these new techs needs a lot of copper. And so it's always good to have copper in your portfolio, always, you know, because that is the backbone to these kind of technologies and industries. So that's always worth having that. So, okay, David, listen, so anyone listening, hopefully you'll be back on the main market, but hopefully by mid-July, you're saying, if the process goes well, goes smoothly. But in the meantime, if anyone's listening right now and they're not following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, David?
Yes, well, I think I touched on it earlier. I mean, it's the team that I've managed to pull together. We have a very an excellent pipeline of transactions that we're working on. In fact, we've made real progress on a number of them in the past 6 to 8 weeks. And I feel that with the experience of the team and the type of assets that we're looking at, it's going to enable us to hopefully extract value relatively quickly.
Excellent, David. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be speaking again not too soon. And maybe by then, maybe you'll be back, you know, people will be able to buy the shares there. So good news.
That'll be nice.
David, speak soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were, at five, Sunrise Resources, SRES. Ascent Resources, AST. Lions Gold at three. That's Lion Ticker. Arr. Hopefully you come on the podcast very soon. N4 Pharma, that's N4P ticker there. And also number one, I think 3 days in the trot now, Great Western Mining Corporation, that's GWMO. I've got to research those because I know nothing about them, but they're being highly followed. All right, and top five most liked RSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were, at five, it's just come in actually, EVR Holdings, that's Holdings and Company, that's Hargreaves Hale, it's gone above 5%. And four, Seeing Machines, SEEC, that's UK Fleet Contract. at 3, Starcom. We discussed the chart with Nicola on the earlier podcast today. Ticker there is Star. Major supply and support agreement. At 2, Echo Energy. Echo Energy. That's Egypt divestment, of course, what we talked about with Matt earlier. And at number 1, the most liked RNS on the podcast, on the platform, I should say, the last 24 hours, was from Asia Met Resources, ARS, ticker. Asia Met reports final essays. I always have a problem with it. I always think of essays, as in, you know, school homework. Then just took the E for an A. But it's Asia Met reports their final essays for BKM feasibility drilling. And that's it there for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.